should pick you up, so that's fine. Okay, our third presentation is from Catherine Hayward, and the title of her presentation is Creating Inclusive Disability Communities.
Can you see that? Yeah, I can. Thank you. So hopefully you'll be able to hear and slightly see me throughout most of the presentation. Also, I do have copies of the presentation up in the first row, and I have a couple of large print if anyone is interested in picking that up afterwards. I have no relationships to disclose, at least related to the presentation. To give a little background about why disability communities are important, the disability rights movement was really one of the first times where people with different disabilities were able to come together, share their experiences, and develop a sense of community. And it was through this collective power that important pieces of legislation, such as the Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act and the Americans with Disabilities Act, were passed. However, not everyone feels part of a broader disability community. This is not that surprising when we consider that the majority of people with disabilities grow up and are socialized by those without disabilities. And while things have improved, we live in a society that still uses language and images that portray disability in stereotypical ways, and really stigmatizes anyone who deviates from a cultural norm. It is sometimes the stigma attached with a disability label that creates as many, if not more, obstacles than the disability itself. Stigma is associated with low self-esteem, social isolation, underemployment, and decreased help-seeking behaviors. And public health is beginning to recognize the importance of looking at social aspects of disability, as indicated in some of the Healthy People 2010 objectives. So it's nice to see we are moving in that direction. There have been several studies with general population and specific occupational groups that indicate there's a hierarchy of acceptance for individuals with varying disabilities. And we see that those who are least accepted tend to be those who have mental retardation or a psychiatric disability compared to those with physical disabilities. And while there is a wealth of attitude research out there, there is very little that looks at the attitudes of people with disabilities towards others with disabilities. So the purpose of my study was to determine whether a hierarchy of acceptance exists among those with disabilities, as is seen in previous studies, and if so, to describe the factors related to social distance. I recruited through disability student centers at two large universities. Participants were able to complete a questionnaire either online or a printed version. And staff at the Disability Student Centers were the ones who directly gave the announcements and the questionnaires out to potential participants due to the high confidentiality nature, which is a whole other issue we could talk about. This did yield the completion of 102 questionnaires, which collected a whole range of data, but in relation to this presentation, some of the items of interest were on disability identity, social distance, contact with others with disabilities, and other socio-demographic variables. Participants were predominantly female. They ranged in age from 18 to 54, with a mean age of 26 years, and a little over half were white. The pie chart here really is just to give a visual representation of the range of disabilities that were seen by the participants. Participants most commonly reported having a learning disability or attention deficit disorder, and this was followed closely by those who had a physical disability. And one other thing that I would like to note about this particular slide is that almost 17% reported having more than one disability. So, you know, we're starting to see an increase in people reporting multiple disabilities, and I was very happy that I allowed people to pick more than one, because you often see in surveys that people are asked what type of disability they have, and you're supposed to just check one box off. So the hierarchy of acceptance was explored using a modified version of the Bogardus social distance scale. Participants were asked to rate the closest relationship they would be willing to have with individuals with 22 different disability labels. And this was a 7-point scale where one represented the closest relationship of would marry, and 7 represented the most distant relationship of would keep in an institution. And believe me, there were a few people who marked some of those. So the top 5 most accepted disability labels were asthma, diabetes, learning disability, someone who stutters, and someone missing a limb, as indicated by the mean social distance scores of 1.33 to 1.84. The least accepted, or those at the bottom of the hierarchy, were individuals with disability labels of mental retardation, tuberculosis, schizophrenia, alcoholism, and drug addiction, as seen by the higher mean social distance scores ranging from 2.69 to 4.14. And this is consistent with the hierarchy that's been seen in previous studies. And I think what's even more amazing is that it's fairly stable. I did some rank order correlation analysis with a couple of studies where I actually knew the disability labels that they were using, and it was consistent, particularly all the way back to research that has been done over 30 years ago. So not only is this consistent with what we've been seeing in general population surveys, it's remained fairly stable. Prior contact has been associated with more positive attitudes towards people with disabilities, so I wanted to look at the effects of contact on social distance. I looked at 3 different contact variables: frequency of contact with individuals with disabilities, the number of people they knew with a disability, and whether or not they had a close friend with a disability. And analysis of covariance indicated the only statistically significant relationship was between having a close friend with a disability and social distance. So having a close friend with a disability is associated with lower social distance. Multiple regression was used to identify a set of predictors for social distance. Based on theory and literature, ethnicity, age, having a close friend with a disability, religiosity, mother's education, father's education, and disability identity were entered into the full model. And the full model with these 7 predictors was statistically significant and accounted for 24% of the variance. However, 7 seemed like a lot, so I used some backward elimination techniques that resulted in a simpler model with 3 predictors accounting for 21% of the variance of social distance. The 3 predictors were ethnicity, having a close friend with a disability, and father's education. And what this translates into is that social distance scores are lower among participants who are white, have a close friend with a disability, and have a father with a college degree or postgraduate education. The hierarchy of acceptance found in this study indicates that people with disabilities, like society in general, are in need of education about different disabilities, particularly those that are more stigmatized. And part of public education campaigns involves including people with disabilities to share their experiences, and when possible, for it to be in a direct setting. And as we've seen in this study, as well as many other studies, contact is important in terms of creating more positive attitudes and increasing acceptance of others with disabilities. So there's also a need to create opportunities for interaction among people with similar and different disabilities, as well as within the general population. We all are part of the general population, so we should all be interacting. And one of the things that has come out of some of the different contact research is that the best situation in terms of creating a more accepting attitude or a more positive attitude is when it's of individuals of equal status. So really you want to be creating opportunities for people to be interacting as peers, and also for it to be voluntary. And I would also like to argue that public education campaigns, as well as the disability section, need to diversify our outreach. And this was one of the things that was brought up at the business meeting for those of you that were at it. And what I mean by this is diversifying outreach to those with disabilities or members of groups that are underrepresented in terms of different disability sections, events, and also to members of other minority groups. One of the things that I've seen and just heard from different people is those with disabilities who also share another minority status, whether that be based on gender, ethnicity, or sexual orientation, are much less likely to affiliate or identify as having a disability. So in summary, reducing stigma is necessary to improve the quality of life of individuals with disabilities. And at a broader level, I would say it's necessary to continue the work of the disability rights movement. I've been to many different disability events and conferences, and there is always great concern about who the next generation is going to be, who is going to continue this work. And so I think if we can reduce some of the stigma and have people more willing to disclose and identify and affiliate with different disability opportunities, that through those relationships we'll be able to continue the attitudinal and policy change that's still needed. As Cheryl Marie Wade, a disability playwright, has stated, if we can recognize as a group that our issues are the same regardless of the kind of disability we have, we'll have the numbers we need to fight back. Thank you.